Welcome to the Realizing Genius podcast. I'm your host, Heidi Christensen. This is where we dive in each week to chat about parenting, education, and realizing our children's genius. I'm an educator with a background in individualizing learning, and I'm obsessed with helping people find and nurture that genius in their children and themselves. Let's dive in. Hi, geniuses. We're here today with Andrea Pittman. Andrea is the executive director and founder of the Nectar Group. Andrea, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah. Now tell us just a little bit more about what you do at the Nectar Group.
Yeah. So the Nectar Group is an education company that is grounded in neuroscience. Our focus is on helping people actually overcome learning challenges so that they can reach their full potential. And from whether that means learning in their schooling to how they perform in the workplace to just how they show up in life. So we do that through several different means. We, first of all, do offer assessments. We use the latest scientific tools to evaluate and measure how someone's brain is working, their cognition, their mental functioning, so that we can really see where their strengths are, but also pinpoint any deficits that may be limiting them or holding them back from working at their full capacity that they're capable of. Look, once we have the answers to what is kind of holding someone up from reaching their full potential, our focus then is on creating customized one-to-one treatments that address the root causes. So we have a kind of a spectrum of services from providing therapeutic interventions that treat the underlying causes of learning disabilities like ADHD or dyslexia. We offer academic coaching and tutoring for kindergarten through graduate school level collegiate work in core subjects such as reading, writing, and math. We also have educational supports such as homeschool supports and consulting. We also do things like provide one-to-one teaching for either one subject or all subjects through our school called Nectar Academy. And then we provide executive function and study skills coaching on things like time management, organization, test taking, note taking. And we also provide integrative health and wellness coaching from a perspective of how to optimize brain health. So pretty wide range of services that, but all unified by targeting how to help our brains be healthy and function at their optimum level.
Oh, I love this. I mean, this information just fascinates me because I know my whole thing is realizing genius, and the genius paradigm, which is kind of my philosophy, is having that paradigm where everyone is a genius and seeing that genius so they can live more fulfilled lives. And that's what you're doing, is you're helping these kids who have, well, people of all ages, overcome these challenges. Mm-hmm. How did you get involved in this?
Yeah. So it's really funny. I found a little paper I had written when I was 18 years old, going on 19, right around my 19th birthday when I moved a few years ago. And I had written in that little, like, I don't know if it was something for school. I don't remember why I wrote this, but it said, I think God's plan for my life is for me to help people reach their full potential. So part of it is I think it's just God's ordained path for me because it's been more of a calling than anything else. But I was a classroom teacher, so I decided to pursue that by being a school teacher. And I had a child in my eighth grade class who was reading at about a second grade level. And I became very curious as to, how do you get to eighth grade and only read at a second grade level? What's the underlying cause of that when kind of all the other variables are pretty similar in terms of like the same school as other children, the same socioeconomic group, you know, these different things. And it's like, same curriculum, but these kids can read and this child cannot. And I didn't want to just accommodate or modify things for this child. I was told by my department head, just give her a C and pass her on. She's kind of missed the window for learning to read. And the school system was just not equipped to really treat that. You know, I knew in my teacher training, I was never taught, how do you actually overcome these limitations? And so I decided to leave the classroom and pursue a career in the field of neuroscience. And because neuroscience is where the research was being done that really unearthed what are the root causes of this, and also is just so full of hope in that if we have deficits in our cognition and in how the brain works that result in these diagnoses of different learning disabilities, and these different symptoms that show up in delayed reading and inattention problems and writing challenges or difficulties with math, we can actually treat the underlying issues. And our whole education system currently is based around compensatory measures, meaning if I have a disability or a difficulty, a disorder, I'm just slower to learn something. Everything revolves around how do we accommodate and modify the instruction to meet them where they're at. There's no criticism of that. We say things in education like we need to level the playing field, or like if this child takes three times as long to do an assignment, we should give them three times the amount of time so that they can still demonstrate what they know. But where the problem comes in that is it never fixes why is it taking you three times longer to do this than it should. We're never equipping people with the actual treatments that can literally rewire the brain. Our brains are softwired to allow us to fully develop into our full potential. To use your terms, where I talk about reaching full potential, we could say realizing your genius. You know, we know that every person has these abilities, and that some of us have hurdles that we have to clear. And so instead of learning how to jump over the hurdle every day through learning, we want to actually remove that hurdle when it's not a healthy or productive hurdle so that we can fully reach our potential or realize our genius. And so I think that's such an amazing gift that so often people don't understand is possible. We're told that these things like ADHD or dyslexia or dysgraphia or dyscalculia or whatever, fill in the blank, are lifelong struggles that you just have to learn to cope with. And that's just really not true. The science since the 1970s had really overturned that. And there's concrete evidence. We can literally even see on a brain scan of how the brain can change. So it's good news for all of us because it means that we are not stuck with any limitations that we're maybe even born with or that were caused by something outside of our control, like an injury or something like that.
So. Yeah, no, that is so true. And like I said, I just love what you're doing. When you started this business, how long ago was that?
I've been doing this work for 20 years, but I started the Nectar Group in its current form about 8 years ago.
About 8 years ago. Have you seen any changes in, you know, like research and how people are doing things?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I first started into this 20 years ago, it was really funny. I always say when I would talk about what I did or what my work was, people would look at you like you had three heads. They were like, change the brain. I do a lot of continuing education for educators and physicians and other types of medical clinicians, like, you know, that's like a speech therapist or occupational therapist or those kinds of things. And I always give them some different quizzes that I call neuromyths quizzes. And when I first started doing this, and I would ask a group of even like physicians, true or false, can the brain be changed? Can you like rewire the brain to overcome some of these limitations? And it would be 90% would say, no, you cannot. We know that the actual answer is yes. And I always kind of equate it to like when we discovered the world was not flat. Like there were still people for a long time who thought the world was flat before we understood. And I've seen that same kind of process in the fields of neuroscience and neurology as the technology has advanced that allows us to see more and more of the brain through brain imaging. We can actually now see what was theoretical when I started. So when I first started, you couldn't see physical changes on a brain scan because you couldn't get that type of, the technology didn't exist to get that type of information. Now we can actually see it. So now it's flipped. When I poll audiences of kind of these neuro myths, it's more about 90% get the correct answer and 10% are still the like, you know, world is flat kind of people that haven't embraced that information. That's in the field of medicine. In the field of education, it's still about 60% of educators don't know this information. There's a great chasm between the field of neuroscience and the scientific research being done there and the field of education. And that's one of my passions, why I do tons of like just free for the community trainings for teachers, is that I want to bridge that chasm. It's crazy to me that, you know, as a teacher, I never learned any of the things about how the brain works. To me, it's equivalent to a cardiologist never taking a class on the heart. You know, like you would be, you know, as a teacher, we are helping develop the brain and learning. And so I think it's really important for whether it's home educators or traditional public school educators, whatever you're educating, it doesn't matter, to have this information and understand the real hope. I meet with families every day that have been told this is as good as it gets. You have to help your child learn to cope with these deficits rather than the hope that they can be overcome. Now, we can't overcome everything. Things like Down syndrome or even autism spectrum disorders, we can improve a lot of areas, but we don't have a fix or a cure for those things at this point. So there are sometimes limitations that we do have to just learn to compensate for and to work around, but that doesn't limit your ability to reach your full potential or to realize that genius that's within each person. I actually thought about it when you shared with me, when you and I first met, realizing, and you told me, you know, about realizing genius, and I just heard that terminology. My grandpa used to always say, "God don't make no junk." And I think that's like a very like South Texas way of saying, like, there's genius and potential in all of us. And what a privilege that we as parents and educators get to be part of helping people unlock and realize that, and that there is so much hope for what's possible there.
Yes. No, I think that's one of the biggest privileges that I was able to have by homeschooling my five sons is being able to see the light bulb go on. I mean, that's just, and then when I've worked with other kids in the classroom or in my coaching, gosh, that's amazing. That is amazing. Yeah. When you're working with parents, I know you have lots of resources on your website and everything. If a parent is concerned, how long should they wait? I mean, because I know everybody, in fact, I've been guilty of it. I've been guilty about saying, okay, your kid isn't reading yet. Don't worry. If they're not reading by the time they're 7 or 10, then start doing something about it. But what do you suggest if a parent is really noticing a problem?
Yeah, my recommendation is to have your child evaluated really kind of as soon as you start to see some red flags. I will say, no offense to dads, but in particular, mom's intuition on this stuff is usually right. I mean, I meet with typically in a week, I meet with as many as 15 parents a week, families a week, and in some weeks more than that, but in an individual basis. And when we are going over test results and looking at what's going on with the child, 9 times out of 10, the mom is like, "Oh my gosh, I started noticing this when they were 4 years old or when they were 3 years old or when they were 6. And I've been saying something's wrong, but everyone told me just to wait and see." And the thing is that, well, let me first say this. If you have waited to see for your child, don't have any guilt about that. Yeah. It's like what the vast majority of people do. And what you do is you do the best you can as a parent with the information and knowledge you have at the time. We acquire new knowledge and then we do better, right? As we learn more things. So there, it's never too late. You can rewire the brain. The ability to rewire the brain is called neuroplasticity. And we know that it exists from cradle to grave. There's a man named Dr. Norman Doidge who said this brain to rewire exists from cradle to grave. So it's never too late. Don't ever beat yourself up about that. You know, hindsight is 2020, right? You know, we all know that. So, but the good news is that you can make changes at any point and treat these issues. However, the younger you are, the less intervention that's needed. It's relatively simple to assess and pinpoint what's going on at an early age. There are screeners, there are assessments that are 2 or 3 hours of assessment process for a child where we can rule out if there is an issue. And then you can put that to rest and know that, like, developmentally, they're going to catch up. They might just need a little bit more time. But if there is an issue that's identified, we can treat it early, swiftly, and keep it from creating additional problems. So what we typically see is there's kind of a snowball effect that, okay, if a child is struggling, say, to learn to read, as school progresses and academic rigor and expectations increase, now they feel low self-esteem. Now they, you might get some school refusal where they push back and don't want to engage, or you start to see behavior problems. Now, when we go to treat it, we don't just have to treat the reading problem. We have to treat that now there's low self-esteem, there's resistance to learning, and you're having to, like, untangle this big ball in a sense that is much more complex than if we could just nip it in the bud earlier and then move on to where it's like a little blip on the radar and you correct it, you correct course and move forward. So I recommend is if you have a worry, like, whether that's me or someone else that you reach out to, that you reach out for help, we will always help you evaluate what type of testing is best. My personal philosophy is I'm very conservative with testing. We can do full neuropsychological evaluations that are 8-10 hours of testing where we look at everything. And sometimes that's needed and appropriate. Sometimes we need a single 1 hour screen that will allow us just to rule in or out if you even should be worried. Another way to look at this is that the way we treat learning issues in the US is known as the failure model. So we wait and see if they fail before we treat anything. And this is why kids don't typically get diagnosed or treated for learning challenges. And the average in the US is 4th to 5th grade. And the reason for that is because we take this, like, let's just wait and see. Versus my argument would be that every, like, 5-year-old would get screened because we could figure out who is going to have an issue with high accuracy before it ever becomes a big problem. And I just think that's a much better approach to going at it for everyone involved.
Yeah, I know as a teacher, there were several of my students that I had to fight to get them an IEP and have them be evaluated. Yeah, they were like, oh, they're too young, or you need to try this intervention and that intervention. And and I was like, okay, people, we just need to get this done.
Yeah. We just delay and delay and delay. It's interesting. I was at a conference a few years ago and there was a presenter there from MIT neuroscience department who's done a lot of research on early intervention. And he was sharing his studies and he was about to publish a new big kind of landmark study on early intervention. And he showed that the assessment that we give early learners at the Nectar Group is that we use it in part because of this research, predicts with 92% accuracy for kindergartners who's going to have a learning problem by 4th grade. So if we can predict with 92% accuracy at 5 and correct course before it ever becomes a problem, why in the world would you not want to do that? There's just so much help and hope and options. And also too, just from a parent's perspective, let's face it, moms and dads both are worried about their children, especially homeschool moms, right? Like, you lay in bed at night and that's the stuff that keeps you up at night. Like, is this going right? Am I doing the right pace? Am I doing the right curriculum? Especially if you have a kid that's struggling, you're like, okay, is this me? Is this what we're doing? Is there something else that would be better? Would they better be served in a public school with an IEP? You wonder all these things, like, do I wait and see? Or what if it doesn't get better? You know, all those thoughts that go through your head. And by doing relatively small amount, not super expensive amount of testing, we can get some clarity on that to even just put your mind at ease. Sometimes it's well worth it so that you're knowing, like, okay, there's no red flags here to be worried about right now. And so I think there can be a lot of help for everyone in the family with looking at that.
Yeah. I know a lot of parents are hesitant to have their kids tested because they don't want their kids labeled.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that?
A great question. You could ask many different professionals this and you'll get different answers about it. My approach with this kind of concern about labeling, that I'm in the minority, so I'll just make that known. I'm very cautious about labeling children. Even though I own a practice that does label and diagnose, the vast majority of clients that work with us, we do not put an official medical diagnosis on. And I think you should ask the question of this and you should be very careful. There's a book that's called Parenting the Whole Child by someone named Dr. Scott Shannon. And the book was originally published under a title that was Please Don't Label My Child. And he rewrote it. He updated it to a broader audience, I think, because the book is really helpful. It's one of my top picks for parents. So that's a little, you know, plug for that book. He's a board certified pediatric psychiatrist who's the former president of the American Holistic Medical Association. And you have the largest integrative psychiatric group for children in the country that focuses on treating root causes versus medicating symptoms. And so, but I bring that up because that concept of please don't label my child, here's my concerns with labeling. Labeling a child, I get to work with people throughout the lifespan. And so I work with adults who come into me and they are a 45-year-old father who is struggling with his self-esteem in the workplace. And I'll ask, like, when did it start? And it started when I got diagnosed with X, Y, or Z when I was in 3rd grade. And I've known ever since then I wasn't smart. And so I think there is a very good argument for not putting these formalized medical diagnoses on people and labeling them. That said, some labels we really need in order to help the child access the resources and the services that they need. So sometimes diagnosing it formally will allow your health insurance to pay for some of the treatments that your child needs. Sometimes there is in more severe types of disorders, something like, say, autism or Down syndrome or other types of genetic disorders, we need to access medical care that you can't do if you don't have a diagnosis. And so there are cases where I advise labeling or diagnosing. In many of the cases, though, we can do the assessment, we can look at the underlying causes of the different disabilities and know what's going on and what treatment needs to be had without ever putting a formal diagnosis that's going to be in their medical or educational records. In our practice, because we're a private practice and we don't report to insurance or schools or medical organizations, the only people that are going to know what is in your child's record are those that you share it with. Mm-hmm. And so from that standpoint, it can be really helpful if you don't want your child labeled. And we don't ever recommend talking to especially younger children about a label or diagnosis. Obviously, on a case-by-case basis, there might be times when, and depending on the diagnosis, that that's important. But we can get answers to what's going on with your child, what's limiting their potential, and what we need to do without putting a medical label or a diagnosis on them in 98% of cases, probably. So I think it's a thing that I talk about with parents and we consult on of what type of testing do we want to do? Are we at a stage where we need a label or not? Is the label actually serve a purpose that's going to serve that child better than not labeling? And so that's a decision that we make together. And I can kind of give some perspectives on both sides for each family that we work with.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that your perspective on how, I mean, I know in one of your presentations, you shared how in the traditional school setting, the schools are set up to work around a challenge where you work to overcome a challenge. Mm-hmm. And so if parents come at it from that, this is a challenge, we're going to figure out how to overcome it. Right. It's not a label. It is like, it is a triumph when you do the overcoming.
Absolutely. I love that. And I think that I get families all the time that come in and they've already been tested separate, you know, from outside of us, whether that's been through a school district or, you know, a psychologist in their community. And they're like, okay, we got a label. We know they have ADHD and dyslexia. We got this report that tells us that they have this, but we don't know what to do about it. Like, great. Now we have the same problem, but now just with a label slapped on their head, you know, like, this hasn't fixed anything. This hasn't made it better. We don't know what to do. And so that's one of my favorite things to do. We will always do review your testing that you've already had, but coming at it not from diagnosing, but from how do we actually help with this? What are the options for treatment? That may be treatment with us. That might be something outside of us. We don't do every type of treatment. Of course, there's a big range of things. And that's one of the things too, that can be overwhelming for parents is thankfully we are in a time when there's a lot of resources available to help, but picking which resource is the right one can be really overwhelming and stressful because most of the time it doesn't come at a low cost, you know, to do intensive intervention. And so also making sure that we do the interventions that are going to make the biggest impact on the child is important too. So I got a little bit off of what you asked, but hopefully that's helpful also.
Oh, very, very helpful. Yeah. Now, I know you work with kids with ADHD. And that is one thing that I have five boys, and I know you, it's pretty common knowledge. A lot of little boys have a hard time sitting still. And I had a friend who came up to me when I started homeschooling, and she was a gifted and special ed teacher. And she said, I am so glad you're homeschooling because with all these boys, at least one of them, a teacher would try and get them on Ritalin. What are some simple ideas that for kids who can't sit still, what can parents do? I know you have a nutrition background as well, that you definitely work with the whole child. What is something like diet, just diet, that could help families?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll answer that specifically about diet, but just to give a little bit of context, when someone says that a child has ADHD, they are stating that they have a group of symptoms. So ADHD is a diagnosis of symptoms. It says that they have inability to attend. They might be like wiggly, driven as like a motor, bouncing off the walls, however you want to say this, Energizer Bunny kind of kiddo, or maybe they zone out. They can't stay on task. You have to be with homeschool families all the time that are like, or even, you know, families that their children are in public school or private school and they're doing homework with them in the evenings. And they're like, oh my gosh, it takes three times longer than it should because they have to mess with the dog. And then if their brother turns on the video, they have to go look at it and they do everything but the task at hand. And if I'm not sitting right there micromanaging it the whole time, they'd be up till 2 a.m. and probably still not done. So these are all symptoms of something that we call ADHD, which is a group of symptoms, but it doesn't tell us why you're having that. And so in order to understand how you can help actually correct these behaviors and minimize and mitigate these symptoms, we need to know what's causing it. And the primary causes of ADHD symptoms are two cognitive deficits called processing speed and working memory. A weakness in either of those or both will cause ADHD symptoms. And so the way we treat ADHD is by improving brain function in those particular areas. And then we remove the need for something like Ritalin. However, just because your child is wiggly or gets distracted sometimes or is active and would rather be jumping on the trampoline in the backyard or riding their bike or playing with their Legos versus doing their schoolwork doesn't mean that they have a disorder. Like, I think we've gone way overboard with diagnosing normal childhood behavior as a disorder. And so we have to be really cautious on that. That said, to answer your question, there are some things that you can do to improve brain function and thus improve attention, focused concentration. So from a dietary standpoint, my number one recommendation is to consider supplementing with omega-3 fish oils. So omega-3 fish oils really help nourish the brain. They help the neurons fire and wire together more easily. And they have shown to outperform stimulant medications such as Ritalin in many studies in terms of improving ADHD symptoms. They're very safe. Most people don't have any kind of side effects or reactions to it. That said, I'm not a medical doctor, so you should always consult with a medical doctor before taking a supplement, but the research is pretty resounding in terms of omega-3s helping. Now, nutritionally, that also means you should increase your intake of dietary healthy fats. So kind of top picks for this are most people think of something like salmon. So making sure if you eat salmon, ideally you're eating wild salmon, not farm raised. The farm raised doesn't have the same benefits because of the diet that the fish are fed. But wild salmon, things like if you can get your kids to eat sardines, they're fantastic for brain health. I did meet with a family recently. They're like, it's literally their kids. They get it for a treat, a can of sardines. And I'm like, you're so lucky. I'd like give that kid as many treats as he wants because it's really great for his brain. But avocados, avocado oil, walnuts, flax seeds are all healthy fats. Grass-fed beef, red meat gets a bad rap, but nutritionally it's full of minerals and can be really healthy. And healthy fat is so important for brain function. 60% of our brain tissue is fat. And so our brains need a lot of fat. Now that's different than McDonald's French fry fat. It's not the same thing, I know. But we're talking about being aware of like cooking with things like coconut oil, olive oil, ghee, butter, just making sure if you're using animal products, you're using grass-fed or pasture-raised. Grass-fed is kind of the highest level, pasture-raised is right below that. But if you can, even eating a little bit less of it because those products tend to be a little bit more pricey. So if you can't afford to do that, especially if you have a bigger family, maybe even consuming a little bit less of it, but getting the higher quality because it is making a difference in terms of brain function for sure. So we can do a week-long training on nutrition and the brain. We do offer a course that it's called 6 Keys to Unlocking Learning Potential. And it has an entire module on nutrition. It also looks at things like sleep and stress reduction and physical exercise, but it's all of these kind of holistic ways to help. And so that's a resource that you can always check out on our website at thenectargroup.com, and if that's something you want to dig deeper into as well.
That is awesome. Well, Andrea, thank you so much for sharing your genius with us today. And I will put links to your website in the show notes so everybody can find that. And thank you again for sharing your genius with all of us, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. You as well.